Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Elena.
Hooty hoo.
Hooty hoo. I like your curlies.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a guest speaker at church today, So I thought I would be
looking your best. Your Sunday best.
Exactly.
Okay. It is a Sunday, guys. It's Sunday vibes over here.
Yeah.
How you doing over there? How's your back?
My back is really good.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Did you get some crack?
I do my stretches every day.
Okay.
So today I'm just a little tired. Got up early this morning before church and prepared a meal, you know, the Southern thing that we do for our people. But there's a lady at our church who... she's not doing very well health-wise, so a team of us have done a schedule of taking her dinners and stuff. So today was my day, and I got up early to do all that. So then after church, nice. I took that food over to her. So yeah.
Yeah, cool. That sounds like the beginning of a true crime podcast.
Yeah, because she didn't show up to church, so I had to take it to her. Like,
it sounds like... That's exactly the premise at the beginning of one of our episodes, I feel like. And we all had a schedule, so we knew who was going to go over there. She didn't show up to church. So.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh,
but she's okay, right? You got there and she was fine. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
She's good.
We will not add that one to our case list. Good.
No, right. Ma'am.
Well, I have kind of a long one today. I wanted to do just a little quick snippet before we get into our episode. I shared on our Facebook page a few weeks ago about there was a disappeared episode on Investigation Discovery featuring the disappearance of Sydney West.
Right.
Which we covered in episode 56, which I'll link in our show notes. There were a lot of details in that episode that we still had questions about.
Right.
When we did our episode on it. Apparently, I'll just share a couple of those things that stood out to me. And apparently she walked to the bridge. And then she walked back off the bridge and placed her bag down on the ground.
Oh.
Okay. I know, because we were wondering, like, they found the bag, but, like, how did they find the bag and where was
it? Exactly.
She also stayed at a hotel by the bridge.
What?
The night before she went to the bridge.
Okay, that's big news.
Yeah. So there were a lot of little things like that that kind of provided clarity for me about some of the feelings that I had, some of the questions I had. And I won't share those just because I just don't think they have a place.
You don't want to go down a
Yeah, I don't want to go down what I think. I mean, I think our episode speaks for itself.
Yeah.
I stand by the reporting. I stand by how I felt in the episode. But I will say that, you know, there were a lot of things that I learned in the Investigation Discovery episode that kind of made me start to open my mind about other possibilities.
Okay.
So if you haven't listened to our episode, it's linked in the show notes. And I also think that her family posted the entire ID episode on the Find Sydney West Facebook group page.
Okay.
Facebook page. And then one more thing, there is an organization called We Are the Essentials. And it's a group of former law enforcement officers and members of military service, and they work to investigate and recover missing people. So they have joined Sydney's family to hopefully bring her home. That's like a recent thing that they posted on their Facebook page the other day. There is a GoFundMe to help this organization with cost of travel and other expenses they might incur during the investigation. And I really hope they can get some answers. That case yeah. just really haunts me. It really does.
Right.
So, with all that being said, let's shift our attention from the beautiful angel that is Sydney West.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about a nasty piece of work.
Uh-oh.
Missook Wang. That's her name. Missook was born in South Korea in 1965. Her mother died when she was just 2 years old, which is really sad. And her dad decided, this single parent life is not for me. So when she was 2 and her sister was 5 months old, he sent them to live with relatives. And I know if I did that, Lena, you would snatch my kids up in like 3 seconds.
Oh, absolutely. Just send them on over.
You'd
here.
Be like, they're mine. They're mine now.
Yeah.
However, she didn't have an Aunt Lena in her life, which is really sad. This was not a great deal for her at all.
Yeah.
Reports indicated that she really was kind of a black sheep in the family, and they treated her more of like a servant than part of the family, really. Yeah, she was starved for love and attention. I mean, just look at how, you know, her life was when she was 2 years old. Her mother died, and she's shipped off, and anyway, it was terrible for her. And we can feel sorry for baby Missook. When she was 23, she met an American man named Andy Nolan, who was actually in the U.S. Army, and he was stationed in Camp Pelham, Korea. So when it was time for him to go back to the States in February 1988, she went with him. She was like, okay. Bye, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
They married the following month in March, so it all happened very quickly, and then they had a daughter named Michelle the next year. And I'm sure she was on cloud nine. I mean, she's in the States.
Mm-hmm.
She came to the U.S. to look for a brighter future, and most immigrants are just grateful to be here, you know? But she wanted more. She was like,
right.
I mean, they've got Chick-fil-A, and that's great, but where's my Chanel, you know?
Yeah.
Money was tight for the young family. He was on a military salary. She wasn't working. And kids ain't cheap. You know, they'd be growing out of shoes. They'd be growing out of clothes. But she wanted that type of disposable income where you can just go and do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like I want to do, right? I want to do that too.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. But she was like serious and nasty about it. And she didn't have that. She didn't have that disposable income. She wanted designer clothes. She wanted nice possessions. And she would see things that other people had. Like, oh, he has a nice car. Why don't I have that car? Like, look at her skirt. Like, I want that skirt. And so she was just greedy. So her husband, Andy, told Oxygen that he was working 2 full-time jobs at this point. He got a second full-time job to keep up with her spending habits. Because it's not like because they didn't have the money, she wasn't spending the money. She was spending the money. That was meant for bills and all the other stuff. And it still wasn't enough for her. Like, an extra person's income still wasn't enough to wet her beak, if you will.
And she didn't work.
She didn't work. At that time.
Okay.
She did end up getting a job, and I'll tell you about that in just a second. Hold on, okay?
Okay.
So she acted like this ungrateful brat, and things were getting really sour in her marriage. I mean, you can imagine. Turns out that frivolous spending would seem like the least of Andy's concerns when he found out that Mistook was cheating on him with a coworker.
Oh, no.
And so here's where I tell you that she had recently got a job at a restaurant. I guess because two people's income wasn't enough, she was like, well, I guess I'll get a job. And then I can spend whatever I want. So she meets this guy at work. His name is Barton McNeil. So when this 10-year marriage finally dissolves and this new relationship with Barton had run its course, because it was going to, wasn't it? She's back to square one. So she's got no marriage. She's got no boyfriend. she's got no, you know, she's got this little job. But she took a better job working as an interpreter at a call center. So she was making a little more money by this point. And in this company, they had these different language sections. So she was in the Korean section, and not too far afield was the Mandarin section. And that's where she met Don Wang.
Oh.
They bonded over their love for Asian food. They took turns showing each other their favorite things about their own culture. Don was Chinese, and he would teach her some about the language and expose her to traditional Chinese food. And their love really blossomed because her previous husband was white. Boring. I'm just saying, like, now she's connecting with someone, you know, in a similar culture. So in 2003, Mistook and Dong married. I said Dong. So I was combining this last name. Sorry, Don.
Words are merging together.
Guys, I've edited some things out already that I just can't speak. My brain is mush. Okay, Don, let's be professional, okay?
Okay.
In 2003, Mistook and Don married, and they lived happily in a town called Crest Hill, which was about an hour south of Chicago, Illinois. This new chapter in life didn't just bring her a new man. It brought with it something that she had longed for her whole life.
Oh.
A mother.
Okay.
Don was very close with his family. Very tight-knit group. Particularly, he was very close with his mother. And Mistook jokingly called him a mama's boy, which he was. But Mistook's mother-in-law, Linda, really opened her arms, her home, and her life to Mistook and welcomed her into the fold like she was her very own daughter. And by all accounts, Mistook accepted her love, and they grew very close. It was like the mother she never had.
Right.
By now, Mistook and Don had a son together, and life was really shaping up nicely for Mistook. And I wish that was the end of the story, because that is perfect, right? That should be good enough. Yeah. All of that should be good enough.
Happily ever after.
Well, that's not the end of the story. A little while later, Linda and Don's father actually ended up getting a divorce, and Linda really leaned on her son for emotional support. Thank goodness she had Don and Mistook to lean on during that time. She and Don would talk on the phone all the time. She'd come over to their house. I mean, she was lonely.
Yeah.
And in return for that emotional support, Linda helped Don and Mistook financially while Don was actually working towards his PhD at the time.
Oh, okay.
Now, in time, Linda's life began to look up itself. Linda was highly educated. She was very smart, a very hard worker. And she had worked as an interpreter for law firms and medical practices before starting her own interpretation. This was great. Let's do it again sometime. What is wrong? Okay. Interpretation.
Okay, take a minute.
She started her own interpretation business, and she became very successful. I always love hearing stories about immigrants who come here and they smash it. Like, they start their own business and they are successful and they make lots of money. I'm just like, yeah, you know?
That's what it's about, yeah.
That's what it is about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she would help Asian immigrants with education and, like, paperwork, procedures, you know, things that you wouldn't know what you're doing when you're in a new country, you're trying to get housing, mm-hmm. insurance, education, and she handled all of that for them. She had a community of people who really relied on her and her services. Then she found love again.
Oh.
She met a man on a dating website, and he really was the perfect match for her. So Linda Tan was her name, and Larry Tida married on January 22nd, 2011. And they were so happy to start their new lives together. Well, several months later, on September 5th, 2011, Linda, now Tida, left her home that she shared with her husband Larry and headed to meet a client in Bloomington, Illinois. But when she didn't return home later that day, Larry grew really worried. He called and called. He had no luck reaching her all day. He called her son Don. He had no idea. And Masuk, her daughter-in-law, also said she didn't hear from her. Now, Don was actually out of town on business in California, so he had been busy with work all day, and he actually hadn't talked to his mom in a while. But by 8 p.m. that night, Larry was like, I'm calling the police. Like, he wasn't one of those people that was like, I'm sure she'll come home later, or, you know, I'll give it some time. He was like, no, this... Something's not right.
Time.
Exactly. The only information that he really could give police was that she was meeting a prospective client. That needed a ride to Bloomington. He didn't really know where exactly they were going. He didn't know what this client's name was. Mm-hmm. Nothing. He really couldn't tell them much. Which leaves investigators like, okay. So a week went by with no viable leads. And investigators are thinking, this doesn't look good. I mean, we have a 70-year-old woman here, and they don't just take off. Then they got a really unexpected break. A waitress came forward and said, you know, I recognize that name, Linda Tida. She said, a woman came into the restaurant and asked me to make a phone call for her. She was dressed really nice, and she gave me $500 just to make this phone call. Now,
$500?
Yeah, I was just about to address that. So, one report said $500. Another report said $20. That's quite the difference.
Yeah.
But either way, she paid her some money, be it big or small, and this woman, like this waitress, agreed to make this phone call. It was weird to her, but she was like, whatever. So she used this well-dressed woman's phone to call a lady named Linda, and she asked her for translation help and said, will you meet me at the shopping center parking lot and take me to Bloomington, blah, 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 blah. So she claimed all this happened the day before Linda went missing. They knew this mystery woman was the key to finding Linda. You know, this sounded weird. And like, why? Why would she do this? And they were lucky enough to get surveillance footage from this restaurant. And they found that it was Masuk who planned this ruse.
Oh, no.
And it confirmed, the video confirmed the timing of the phone call, the date as well. So when CCTV footage was pulled from the parking lot where this meeting was to take place, they did see Linda pull up in her car. And just about that time, another car pulls up and parks a few spots away. Now, Linda exits her vehicle and a woman gets out of the other vehicle and walks over to her, and that woman was Masuk.
Masuk.
Pretty quickly, things kick off in the video. There seems to be some kind of verbal argument. Of course, you can't hear anything that's being said. But there's like pushing and shoving. Remember, these aren't 20-year-olds catfighting, right? This is a woman and her like 70-year-old mother-in-law. So at one point, Linda tried to leave and Misook kind of blocked her from getting to her car. More conversations like taking place. And then all of a sudden, they just part ways and get in their cars and drive away.
Oh.
Really weird, right? And the investigators were probably expecting to see Misook like drag Linda into her car and drive away with her. But that didn't happen. They just left the frame. And police were like, okay, well, where did they go?
Where to now?
Yeah, where to now? Exactly. Now, they brought Misook in for questioning because they're like, please do explain. What happened between these women who had been so close? Like, just like mother and daughter, what happened? Like, why was it perfect and now it's not? Like, what's all the fighting about, ladies? At first, Misook said she had no idea where Linda went. I mean, she had been searching for her, too. She was participating in the search and driving around and trying to figure out where she was and had no idea. Hadn't spoken to her. She was cool. She was calm. Collected, if you will. And she had a very relaxed demeanor. She didn't appear to be hiding anything. But they knew she was hiding something because they had that video footage. And they knew that Misook saw Linda in the early morning hours the day she went missing. So they're like,
right. Why didn't you tell us about this?
What I forgot to tell you a little bit ago was that this financial support that Linda was providing Misook and her son.
Right.
I think I skipped like a whole paragraph because I didn't mention any of this, but Linda would take Misook to the spa, to the casino, shopping. She spoiled her rotten. She really did. And another thing she did was gave her money to open a sewing shop. Misook wanted to basically be rich. So she thought if she started her own business like Linda had, then she would, you know,
have
bring
some
this
revenue
money in.
Coming in.
Exactly. So not only did they have the surveillance footage from the parking lot, but they had also performed a search on Misook's sewing shop and found some of Linda's clothing in the dumpster out back with a little blood on them.
What?
Yes. At this point, they just needed her to spill the beans because they were they had a bunch like big puzzle pieces put together. You know those big puzzles like that are like only 10 pieces. They're like for toddlers.
Yeah.
This is the kind of case they were putting together. They're like, you're an idiot, you're a liar, and we can see this picture. Very clearly. We just need like the middle three pieces. That's all we need. So they confronted her with what they had. And she kind of just slumped over and exhaled and then just unloaded.
Ooh.
Yeah. She told investigators that she believed her husband was having an affair with Linda's secretary, who had actually been a family friend and Linda's assistant for many years. I mean, she was like part of their family, basically. They had known her a lot longer than since Misook had been in the picture. Gotcha. So she thought that her husband and this woman were having an affair. So she went on to say that, you know, I think Linda even knew about the affair and helped them cover it up. And that just hurts me worse than the actual affair, that my own mother-in-law would be helping him with that. So she said she only set up this meeting through that waitress because Linda was ignoring her phone calls. She tried to go over to Linda's home in the days before Linda went missing and the door was shut in her face. Like, Linda was just ignoring her at this time. And she said, I just wanted to talk. I just wanted to talk to her. So Masuk said an argument broke out once Linda saw that it was Masuk there and not some client.
Yeah.
And it just turned violent. She said, Linda began to push me. She slapped me. And I was, you know, she said, I was just so taken aback. So I tried to squash it.
Right.
And I just said, you know.
By murdering her.
Yeah, exactly. She said that, you know, I just told her whatever I needed to say to get her to leave, which we know wasn't true because we saw the footage. Yeah. She blocked her from leaving. She said that once they each left the parking lot, she thought it was squashed. She thought that was it. But Linda followed her to her sewing shop. And when they both arrived, Linda threw down again. Like, Linda got out of the car and she starts wailing on her. And she said, I was so scared. I was just defending myself. I tried to get her off of me. I shoved her down to the ground. And I guess I was just too rough. And then it was too late.
Okay.
So she described to investigators how she choked Linda. She strangled her with a purse strap and a sweater until she stopped moving.
Now, like, strangling, that's aggressive. Like, you're going to...
Exactly, Lena. Strangling takes a long time.
Yeah.
Right? It's... And it's sustained strength. You have to, like, keep the pressure on for a long time. And it's agonizing for the person.
But not to mention, like, you went to find these items to wrap around
Well,
her.
I think that she had it on her person. Like, I think the sweater... From what I read, I think they were on her person. Either it was Linda's handbag was on her and it was her sweater or vice versa. And then it just kind of like they were just there and it just happened.
Okay.
Yeah. So strangling, choking, it's an angry job. To get someone to die that way.
Yeah. It doesn't just happen.
Exactly. But Masuk wasn't alone while all this was going down, and I don't mean Linda was there with her.
Yeah.
Masuk's 5-year-old son
was
with her this whole time.
Lands.
From the minute she rolled up to that first parking lot, he was in the car. When they left to go to the sewing shop, he was in the car.
Oh, no.
When the strangling is taking place, he's in the car, and... We will likely never know to what extent he was aware of what was going on. But I'm sure he has some kind of memory from that night.
I mean, 5 years old.
Oh, so she said she was exhausted from just having exerted herself. You know, it takes so much energy to kill somebody. So she decided to take Linda's body inside to her sewing shop. She found a back corner to kind of hide her in until she figured things out. And she lay down on the couch in her office for a minute to rest.
Oh, okay.
You know, murder's hard work, guys.
Yeah, you gotta, obviously. You know,
do some self-care. Lay down for a second, you know. So then she got up and got to work. I guess she was like, okay, I gotta snap out of it. So she takes Linda's car and drove it to Midway Airport and abandoned it there.
Oh.
And then she took a bus back to Bloomington. She must have gone home after that, I'm not sure, and got a good night's sleep because she didn't go back for Linda's body until the next day.
Oh.
Remember, her son's with her this whole time. So she takes her son back to the sewing shop the next day.
Oh, my Lord.
And she had told a friend later on, like after everything happened, that Linda's body smelled like eggs. So she just needed to get rid of her.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Probably should have thought of that. So she stuffed her in a plastic tote and took her out to the Des Plaines Fish and Wildlife Preserve, which was about an hour away. Now, after she had made the full confession, Masuk agreed to take detectives to Linda's body. She seemed really emotional when she sat down in the interview with Oxygen Network and said she felt really bad for burying her like that, and it just felt really disrespectful to her. I mean, I think murdering her was a bit disrespectful.
Yeah, that's what I'm over here thinking in my...
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, breaking someone's neck to stuff their body into a plastic tote is also disrespectful. Yeah. So, now, the tears were no doubt real, okay? I just think they were self-motivated.
Okay.
Masuk strikes me as the type that will do absolutely anything to get what she wants, no matter how deplorable. And she doesn't think about consequences until she's, like, in it. And now, look, she's been caught.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I bet she's crying. Masuk was arrested and held on $1 million bail. And it was crickets. Crickets. Nobody's paying that $1 million, sweetie. While awaiting trial, she was writing letters to family, friends. And in one of her letters that she had written to her... back to her family in South Korea, it was intercepted, as they are, and read.
Oh.
And she was telling them that she thought she would be entitled to half of Linda's life insurance policy upon her death. You see, Don Wang, Masuk's husband, was planning to file for divorce when he returned from his business trip.
Oh.
According to him, he was not having an affair with his mom's assistant. He said, we were like brother and sister, so we were not in a romantic relationship. But he said, I was done with the marriage. Masuk was money hungry, which is what her previous husband said. She's constantly wanting more and more from him, and he was just done with it. Like, she was taking now from his mother, causing that whole, like, he just was like, no, we're not doing this. I don't know if Don had that conversation with Masuk before he left for the business trip. I don't know if he said, we're getting a divorce when I get back from this trip.
Right.
But either way, she knew the jig was up.
Yeah.
Because she knew she wasn't going to get a penny more. She needed to take Linda out before Don left her, so that she would be entitled to half that money in a divorce settlement.
Okay.
So she thought. Now, prosecutors were like, bingo. And they used this at trial, because there's your motive right there. And I think this is a lot stronger motive than she was just mad at her mother-in-law, supposedly, for knowing about this alleged affair, right?
Right.
So they called a witness named Tanya Bean to the stand, who testified that Masuk told her that she planned to kill Linda before the murder happened. So there's your premeditation.
Yeah.
So Masuk had this public defender named Brian McIldowney. I don't know. Is that your name, guy? I'm sorry. McIldowney, I don't know. At trial, the defense stuck with this self-defense claim and told the jury how Linda came at Masuk, and she was just reacting to a threat, like anyone would do in the situation. Well, the jury was not interested in this theory. They thought she was volatile, and they did not believe self-defense. They clearly saw that Masuk lured her there.
Right.
For a reason. And Masuk was convicted of first-degree murder, and she was sentenced to 50 years for the murder, 5 years for the concealment of Linda's body, which she actually pled guilty to before the trial for the murder charge.
Oh,
and those
okay.
were the those terms were to be served consecutively. Okay. Now, in all my true crime obsession, I don't think I've come across someone who's, like, pled guilty to one of the lesser charges and then went to trial on the murder charge. I don't know. I feel like, I'm sure people do that, but I don't think I've
encountered
heard about
that.
It, right?
Yeah, right.
Like, no, I absolutely, it's mostly like, no, I absolutely had nothing to do with it, or yes, I did it, and they confess, not, okay, I murdered her, but I'm not pleading guilty to that, but I did hide her body, so I will plead guilty to that. Right. You know what I mean? Anywho, the aftermath of the trial was a bit of a litigation merry-go-round, I guess you could say. She contested the testimony of Tanya Bean, who said that she had planned the murder. She says that's a lie. Mm-hmm. And by the way, in all the post-conviction reporting, she's actually called Miss Sook Nolan, which was her first married name.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if she legally changed it back to that name or what.
Probably for her child, because wasn't the child with the first husband?
So she had two kids by two different men.
Okay.
She had
a
daughter from her first marriage, and then she had the son from the second marriage.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what the reason for that was. I bet the first husband was like, don't change your name back to my name.
I thought
I got rid of you.
No.
But shortly after her conviction in 2012, she filed a petition on her own without an attorney for reconsideration of her sentence, citing ineffective assistance of counsel.
Right.
Which was denied, actually. I don't know how she managed to do that on her own, but she did.
Yeah.
She claimed her court-appointed attorney failed to call a neighbor as a witness in the trial that would have told the court that she saw bruises on Masook's arm in the days after Linda's disappearance, which might have supported that self-defense claim. Right? Mm. So if Linda had inflicted such injuries, maybe the jury would have thought, oh. Well, the court said, sweetie, other witnesses were called that supported your self-defense claim, so...
Yeah, what's one that going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Then on December 8th, 2021, the 4th District Appellate Court reversed the dismissal, saying that she is entitled to new representation. And that new representation can petition for a new trial. So they said it's not just because that one neighbor wasn't called, but her lawyer didn't get an affidavit from the neighbor to include in post-conviction petition. I think they're saying that it was more of a procedural mistake than anything else,
mm-hmm.
which is nitpicky. Some judges might go, whatever. And then some judges might be like, nope, you know, it says here in the law handbook of, you know, whatever. But so it seems like a procedural thing. But mm-hmm. she didn't end up getting a new trial for that either. Then in May of 2023, so just this year, she tried for a new trial once again. And she requested an evidentiary hearing. Now, her new attorney, Jeff Brown, filed a petition to vacate her guilty plea on the concealment charge because her counsel at trial told her that she was going to serve 2 years, not five.
Oh.
And she didn't know that it would be served consecutively with the murder charge. Tomato, tomato. Like,
exactly.
You're going to be eating slop for a few more years. I mean... You got 50 years for murder.
Yeah.
So what is, you know what I mean?
Another,
like the difference between two and five.
Well, these people love to let them out early on good behavior. So just be good.
Right?
And I'm sure you won't even have to serve your whole
I mean, she's grasping at straws at this point. So her trial attorney, the old one, the court appointed one, was at this evidentiary hearing. And he said, listen, I did advise her to plead guilty to the concealment charge, and I told her that I hoped she would get 2 years.
Uh-huh.
I hoped.
She heard what she wanted to hear.
Exactly. He said that part of the strategy with the guilty plea for the concealment was that if she admitted to that wrongdoing, it might bolster her self-defense claim. Because if you're saying... I didn't mean to kill her. It was self-defense.
Right.
I can't say I'm guilty of that. But yes, I did conceal her body. Then maybe it would have benefited her. So he just maintains that he was doing right by her. He was doing what he felt was the best thing for her in the situation, which her situation wasn't good because, mind you, she had made a full confession, right? The assistant state's attorney, Mary Cole, said, here. Oh, and by the way, Judge, the evidence was so strong at trial, like, this matter would likely have made zero difference in the outcome of the verdict. And she's probably right. Masuk confessed to the killing. The jury would have been like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, whatever. It doesn't amount to a hill of beans at this point. And it wouldn't have back then either. Well, Lena, what if I told you that Linda Tida's death wasn't the only one that Masuk was linked to?
Oh, I mean,
would you believe me?
Well, yeah, I would believe you, but yeah, that's sad. That's shocker.
In order to tell you about that, I'm going to have to take you back in time 10 years before Linda Tida's murder. And I will tell you about that next week.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Sorry to leave you hanging. I will tell you all about that next week.
Okay, I can't wait to hear. We will get into the nitty
old gritty.
So much has happened already. What are we going to find out?
I know. This is a tough one. I was going to do it all in one episode, but I think that this next victim deserves their time, their own story, and their own time. Yeah. And it's a messy one. There's a lot of messiness in the second story. So we will see you next week for that.
All right. Well, this was great. Let's continue next week.
We're going to do it again, guys. We'll see you then.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast. Know what else they had, Lena?
What's that?
They had searched Masuk's showing. Oh, I just peed a little.